This episode has been brought to you by Sake Man, a group of sake superheroes bringing sake to the world. This week on Meat and Three, we get ready for Super Tuesday by looking at how food shapes elections both at home and abroad.
People know that you don't order a Philly cheesesteak with Swiss cheese as John Kerry did back in the 2004 cycle.
A young group of friends decided that they would put up a website which told voters which polling booths had sausages.
Prime Minister David Cameron was pictured about a week after this incident eating a hot dog in a bun with a knife and fork because he was so afraid.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Drew and Mac Anderson, co-founders of Cleveland Kraut, those big, beautiful bags of raw, fermented, crunchy sauerkraut taking over store shelves everywhere. Cleveland Kraut is one of those great stories of three brothers with a passion for fermentation, starting a business at the farmer's market that their mother founded, which is like amazing to me, decades ago. Today, it can be found in about 6,500 stores across the U.S. Welcome, brothers.
Thanks for having us.
So I have the two brothers, but not the brother-in-law here today.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So you grew up in Cleveland?
Yeah. Yep. Born and raised.
Amazing. And tell me about this farmer's market that your mother started and how you were, what did you do there and what was that like and why did she do that? That's so amazing.
We were pretty lucky having our mom as our mom.
She's where we get our entrepreneurial spirit for
absolutely.
Sure.
That's amazing.
So she's a chef. She studied at Cordon Bleu in Paris.
Right.
And then went to U of M and studied biology. So she has this background of food and science.
Wow.
And she started, you know, having kids. And yep. With our older sister, she was concerned about what we were eating.
Yep.
And this is, you know, over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I remember before the farmers markets, we would get dragged out to Amish country every weekend.
Not a good way to spend your weekend.
We're like, we want to watch cartoons and play football or whatever. And
she's like, we're getting eggs.
Yeah. It was always the ride out was always a pain. But then when we got there, it was just all fun being picking berries.
We were probably the only Cleveland City kids with like a good stable of Amish friends.
Wow.
We had our Amish homies out there.
I went to an Amish wedding. That was amazing.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of volleyball. Great food.
I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to hearing about that after we get to like, you know, velocity and marketing.
Of course.
She started this. She had this passion. She wanted to bring, she was making friends with a lot of different farmers.
Right.
And farmers are oftentimes right at the poverty line.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And so she thought, well, why don't I help them out, bring them into the city, and have them sell direct, top dollar margin.
And she's like a woman of my heart. This is awesome.
She grew up in Detroit, and you can't exactly tell, but her grandmother is Burmese. So there was very much a go to the market, pick your fresh produce, get everything to cook.
Eastern Market in Detroit.
She grew up in that kind of atmosphere, and then actually did help the Traverse City Farmers Market start when my father was at Maritime Academy up there, and she was living there.
Right.
So she had kind of this history. And when I was 4 and Drew was 8, you know, child labor laws aside, we were schlepping produce and helping. That was the first when she opened the market. And so every Saturday.
And it's still going, the market.
Still going, yeah. So she's now got, it's a great nonprofit, North Union Farmers Market. She's got 15 in the height of the season. It's a great small business incubator for hundreds of companies, obviously great farmers. So we grew up, you know, our Saturday morning. You know, while we didn't have to drive out to Amish country anymore, we knew what we were doing Saturday morning. And she,
so the two of you, right? So you're Drew, you're 4 years older.
Yeah.
Did you like? Because I feel like you would see sort of like, did you start to pick up on the differences between the guys who were gonna probably take this into more of a business, and the guys who were just like trying to sell their carrots.
Oh yeah.
And separately, did you have sort of different parts of it that interested you that kind of translate to what you're doing now, or is it like that too much of a stretch? Like,
so early on, we could start to pick them, and even my dad early on, we had some Amish friends who couldn't make it to the market. Mm-hmm. And so we were reselling their sausage, their quinoa, their flax, all that stuff. So we really learned early how the market goes. But you right. could see if people had abundance, if they had the right color schemes, if they yeah. were sampling, like these were the things that got you to the next level and made you like a repeat buy for
right.
people.
And you could tell that even that young.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then, I mean, in high school and throughout college as our summer job, but we were always managing a market. We were all tasked with managing markets throughout the week. And, you could easily tell, like, after a couple of years, some would fizzle out. The mm-hmm. ones who truly weren't passionate or weren't putting the time and effort and thought process into their products,
right.
you could tell that, oh, they wouldn't last long, or you could just kind of see them fizzle out. And then the ones that you kind of knew, like, okay, they're presenting an experience. The yeah. product is amazing. The packaging, they're doing a yeah. great job for where they're at. Yeah. And then we'd start to see them on our local grocery yeah. store shelves. So that was definitely in the back.
The farms who told the story too, that yeah. experience, like here's yeah. the name, this is why we do this. That's a 100-year farm.
It's amazing, right?
And when people can, you know,
connect
experience
with it.
And connect, yeah. that's the road to success.
Separate question. Did you both like sauerkraut as kids?
I did not.
Okay. I did.
Okay. I mean, that total Fair. Aside. Okay. But also, from what I've read, neither one of you, I mean, I ask the question all the time, like, did you want to have your own business? What did you want to do when you mm. were little? It didn't seem like either one of you was like gunning hard to be an entrepreneur.
No, it was definitely yeah. I think for both of us, it was always in the back of our head. And our mother encouraged that.
Right.
She definitely was always like, you know, you should be.
That's
just think
why
about starting
got a business
your own
degree?
Business. Right. Yeah,
yeah.
That's actually why I studied business. Right. I always had little, it was like sixth grade. I was actually, Drew was big into paintballing. And I just discovered like there's this platform for it. And I would start taking apart his guns and selling them.
Yep.
And I was just hopping
to
on
my dismay. Like,
yes, I would
like,
imagine.
What happened this? But I just basically for summer would set upstairs and just kind of sell all these things
yeah.
online. And then I realized I could sell anything. And
online.
So, yeah. And there's been a few little iterations.
He asked my mom, you know, like the summer when he was 13 years old or something. Like she goes, what do you want to do this summer? And he says, I need a desk upstairs. And she's like, dad, okay.
Right.
And she would come up and he was just on eBay, on
right.
these forums where
yes.
you could sell stuff. And he
yep.
was just selling like whatever we had, old video games, anything.
So funny.
And he would pack it up
yep.
and take the train down to the UPS store. And just,
there are definitely, yeah. I feel like, you know, I've said this before, but I feel like their guests are kind of who come on are either like they're selling literally like,
yeah.
not just stuff
yeah.
or they're kind of like very enterprising and they you know there's kind of two sides of the entrepreneurial coin. One is like that I gotta sell stuff, and the other is like I'm going to be a business person and I'm going to make systems for this and I'm
mm-hmm.
going to have a job all the time and work, you know. And
yeah,
so you were
definitely the sales,
because you're the youngest.
Right.
My youngest, I found out, went to camp and like started a black market magazine.
There you go.
Business. The magazines were contraband.
Mm.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And
it's a hot item at camp. It's smart.
Yeah, at an all boys camp. And so I had this mixed emotion of like, oh my gosh, what? How,
yeah.
First of all, how'd you buy it? Like, of course, he has four older siblings who
yeah.
like were like thought the whole thing was very funny. But I was mortified, obviously, because the head of the camp called and he's like, we have a problem. You know, but also this other part of me was like, oh my gosh, Will,
yeah.
like, go you. I had no idea. He made a lot of money last summer.
Yeah.
High five, but you're grounded.
Right, exactly, exactly.
You secured
but I think
10,000
there is
magazines.
Like a youngest sibling sort of like, I'm going to get away with this probably more
he
than.
He got away with
I'm
everything.
Sure. Just
yeah,
crazy.
Much to Drew's dismay.
I'm
oh,
sure. I'm sure.
No.
So fast forward. Drew, you mm-hmm. and the brother-in-law. So this is your sister's husband.
Yeah. Luke. Yes.
Luke. Perfect name.
Mm-hmm.
Fits right into the family.
Oh, yeah.
Separately, we're both playing around from the folklore
yeah.
with fermentation. Can you elaborate a little
so
bit?
So I
yeah.
was living, I have a degree in like statistics, and so I was in banking and analytics, and I was working for a bank in Virginia, in Richmond, actually. Right. And you couldn't get good Midwestern fare there. It was like just pierogies, kielbasa, sauerkraut, fermented things, pickled things.
Right.
So I started making all that in my apartment.
Fun.
I go home.
Were you guys, did you like cooking? That's enough.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So we cooked constantly. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big part growing up, is there's always dinners, always with the family at the table, and you're always contributing. Yeah. And we still actually make, when we're home, obviously not running around on this crazy entrepreneurial quest, but we do try and make it back to our mom's place on Sundays, and everybody brings something from the market and we cook. And it's a great way to kind of decompress and get the family together, not at work, because we are all always together.
Got it. Okay. So sorry to interrupt, but I did want to just check in about the cooking thing. So you're now, are you living alone in Richmond? Like,
I've had like roommates, you know, and
you're cooking for everyone and trying to sort of
fermenting sauerkraut. Yeah. I was like hand making sausages with natural casings, all that good stuff.
Right.
And I come back to Cleveland for a job, and I found out my future brother-in-law,
Luke,
who has, he's got that, he's like half Croatian, half German. His grandmother used to have a crock bubbling away, you know, in her home. And he was making sauerkraut as like a way to get in touch with his roots.
Right. Such a nice way for you guys to bond.
And so over a beer, another fermented product, right? Over a beer one night, we're just eating right out of a mason jar some that Luke had made. And it's crunchy. It's delicious.
Yeah.
And this stuff is so good. And we had started, you know, like, we've got this avenue to the farmer's markets, which is our test market. You know, we can go in. We know a couple of people, right? And why don't we try this? It's probiotic. It's fermented. Yeah. Ours is crunchy. It's delicious. This is not, as far as we could tell at the time, it wasn't available on the shelves.
Right.
Let's go check it out. And so that was one night. And that's when we kind of looped in Mac.
So Mac, you graduated from college around that time.
Yeah. And when Drew was picking up this hobby, he was kind of telling me about it. And I initially, to your point earlier, it wasn't my favorite food. My mom would always make sausages with kraut, and she would very much cook it down.
Did they cook the kraut? Yeah, because the way that kraut was growing up, it's like cooked, and then you lose all the fun stuff. Right.
Cook
but
it down.
Now that it's raw, it's like so good.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I think that's an experience that we're trying to battle, is that forced upon you as a child, the cooked mush. But so he was telling me about it, and I'm like, I don't know. But I went and visited and tried some of his, and I'm like, oh, this is bomb.
Yeah.
Like, teach me how to do it. And so he did it in a college. I was fermenting, and my housemates, my friends were like, what the hell are you making? Like, dude, what is this in our kitchen? But come barbecue season, and then, you know, the trendy girls who knew what fermented foods were would call, come over. That's when my friends would hop on the bandwagon and say, oh, okay.
Yes.
So, yeah, they were teaching me
so
how.
So it worked to, again, your hard work benefited him getting action. Okay.
Absolutely.
So you guys basically, so this was around 2014 when, and so you're at the farmer's market. You're not quite, I mean, from what I understand, you all still have your day jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was the turning point where you went from this is fun and we're going here and into like, okay, we're actually going to all dive in and do this?
Yeah.
So
there was about a year and a half where, and this was kind of, it was definitely a grind period, but we'd leave, you know, 3-4 nights out of the week. Drew had turned in a sports car. He would pick me up. I was working at a big law firm. He'd pick me up in a suit. I'd be in a suit. He'd be from the bank. And we'd go to the commercial kitchen at 7 p.m., change into, you know, whatever kitchenware. And then
Luke is an architect. So he'd come
he'd
in,
meet us there.
You know, put his pencil up and put down the ruler, get to the kitchen.
And we'd kind of make kraut until 2 in the morning. There were definitely beers shared. And our first kind of outside employee who was helping us cut vegetables is like a James Beard like nominated chef, but she was like in there starting her own butchery. Cleveland has a great like emerging food scene, so we were really blessed to come up in that community. But there was about a year and a half of iterating, make sure our recipes were there, selling on farmers markets and building up that local demand, until it was kind of getting outrageous how much people are like, why can't we get this in Heinen's, which is our local store.
And that was what I was going to ask. I mean, did you guys, first of all, did you sit down and you were like, I'm really good at, you know, people, and I'm really good at numbers? Like, did you divide it up on?
It was almost like a natural flow. And I think we were really blessed. And there's some kind of peers that we had out of that commercial kitchen that we definitely accelerated a lot quicker because we were really able to divide and conquer. I had that just knack for sales. And it was, I was selling securities at the time. It was just something that I always loved to do. Drew, from the finance background and just overall strategy and leadership, just from being a big brother, you kind of get some of that ingrained anyway.
The eldest remain the eldest.
And then, to Drew's point, Luke with his rulers, but he's very, he understands.
Well, he's the brother-in-law, process. So he didn't actually get to choose what. You were like, you are going to clean the barrel. And he was like, okay, no, I'm kidding. Luke, I'm sure you're great, sister. But, you know, I mean, yes. So what it, so he was sort of
he's
more,
got the operational mind.
Got it.
And it's like, you know, we always joke, Luke draws, he's an architect, draws a very straight line, A to B. He knows how to build the lines, and he's very detail-oriented, just like operations. Processes.
It's great. I mean, you guys, it's kind of, I mean, it's really a good story. This is really fun. I'm just thinking about my kids. I'm like, what could they do that would be legal that they could make? Because all of them... Well, we'll talk about that another time, too.
It sounds like one's got a burgeoning media career.
Media is a nice way to put it. Okay, so you divided them. Natural skills made sense. Again, you're in a commercial kitchen. You're making a lot of kraut. Did you kind of set, like, if it hits this, then we will go all in? Or was it just sort of like... it's do or die time, or like, what was the moment?
You know, I think it was over the summer of 2015. We kind of quit our jobs. We knew, but you really didn't know if it was going to work. We had big dreams, and we were like, we're going to build this thing. We're going to sell Cleveland kraut across the country. And you know, this is what we're going to do. But there's always that doubt. But I really felt in 2015, like I drank my own Kool-Aid, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden I'm like, I'm doing this for the next 5 to 10 years, at least, you know, this is happening. And so that's when you start selling everything.
I think it's funny because every, you know, I remember going to Fancy Food and being like, okay, if there is a store that wants this, I'll make it. And then when that, you know, Whole Foods turned into like, okay, we like it and the velocities are great. Now we want you to do regional. I remember being like, okay, now it's a real business. Then like every step of the way, and it's still like just now I'm kind of like, well, now it's a real business. I wonder when that ever is going to stop.
No, you know, it's just the next rung of the ladder. Right?
Exactly.
You think you've hit a pinnacle and you're like, wait, okay, what's next?
Right.
What's our next challenge? Who's the next customer?
You always like think that, well, man, when we get onto shelves of, you know, Wegmans, you know, that's going to be, we're going to feel so good. Yep. And you get that order and there's a high five and then you're like, okay, what's next?
I know.
How do we not lose this shelf
I know.
And then get the next shelf?
Well, that's the thing. Someone very wise told me at the very beginning of this, you don't ring the bell when you get the PO. You ring the bell when you get the second PO and the third PO, right?
So you got to move it off the shelf.
Okay, so we're going to take a little break. Then we're going to fast forward a little bit and get some really good advice from you guys for the founders and the other people that are listening.
Cool.
Just life advice.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Sake Man. What is Sake Man? Sake Man are judo athletes wearing Lucha Libre-inspired masks that act as sake heroes. This team of athletes moonlight as sake educational professionals spreading sake to the world. Learn more about their mission and their favorite sakes at saketotheworld.com. That's saketotheworld.com.
I'm back with Drew and Mac Anderson from Cleveland Kraut. Okay, so fast forward a few years. I feel like 2018, from my like little piecing together of what I've read, you changed from the jars into the bags.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that was sort of a big turning point for the company? Like, do you feel like going into the bags changed a little bit of the vibe? They weren't in like these sort of homey looking jars anymore. Mm-hmm. There's definitely like, there's a brand that's like bold and big on it. And like, can you talk a little bit about sort of like that stage?
Yeah. It's so we made that decision after a lot of, you know, a lot of thinking, a lot of arguing.
And by that time, sorry, you were, I know you started in Heinen's, but by that time, how many stores about
by
were
that
you
that time we were probably in 500 to 700 stores.
Okay.
So we were we had a nice little business humming along. We were growing. Our velocities were in the jars very good. We were category captains wherever we were on shelf.
That's amazing.
So it was going very well. So it was one of those things where it did come out of necessity. Drew will speak to kind of the reasoning behind why we had to go to the pouch, but it also ended up being a really strategic move. But it was still like, we're kind of like, okay, things are going so well. Do we want to, like, why fix it if it's not broken? But it was broken.
Well, I feel like there are a lot of stories where, you know, people make these hard decisions. I mean, I was just listening to Bill from Spindrift.
Yeah.
They stopped an entire line that was actually their most profitable line. And just, I mean, that takes a lot
I'm sure that's a fun investor call.
There's some sleepless nights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's scary to change the name. It's scary to change anything if it's working.
Yeah.
But to me, it feels like those bags are so iconic now, right? I mean, maybe it's because I'm next to them on every shelf I'm in. And I'm like, there they are, you know. But I don't know that I would have been as attracted to a jar.
Yeah, you know? No, it's we felt that it gives us a great on-shelf presence. We worked with our good friends at Interact really hard on making sure that the feel from the brand carried over from the jar.
Definitely.
It was definitely, like, we were really happy with how those felt, and we always would get a lot of compliments, but we wanted to, it does give that kind of bulletin board right in the shelf.
Totally.
Yeah.
So. Totally. Yeah. And it just looks like you're getting so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
we actually get a little bit more too.
Right. Which is cool.
We couldn't, it was an operational thing. Yeah. Our jars, we were hand packing. And so we had teams and we would have to go back there and hand pack everything. And that's how we started. But at the time when we're trying to, you know, Mac needs to be traveling all the time, I need to be fundraising. It's like hard to continue to join the team. So we were like, how can we? We need to be able to make this faster. We need to be able to streamline this. We need to automate. And also the jars leaked all over the place.
I would think leaking. I would think shipping is more explosive.
They're really heavy.
More expensive.
Yeah,
I mean.
It was what we can get on a pallet for pouches would take an entire truckload of glass.
Well, I've actually done some studies because I talk about the pouches, our pouches a lot, and it's 24 to 1. So it's basically one truck of pouches to 24 trucks of glass.
Yep. Easily.
Which is kind of crazy. So
it is.
You know.
And the other thing is the nature of fermented food. Our pouches do have the breathable vent back. And you'll notice we did have kind of May bubble on our jar because they would kind of explode. And there was a period of time.
What is May bubble?
It was like this might bubble. Like if it,
oh, and, May bubble. And people I thought it was like an industry insider term. I was like,
we had people calling us and we were like, what is the May bubble?
Right. It's not the June fizz.
No, exactly.
We found that in the natural sets that we were in Whole Foods, the buyers who were kind of a little bit later on the adoption curve, they would understand it's fermented, it's alive, it's going to bubble up.
Right.
But we were hitting a lot of conventional stores where these people are, you know, they're venturing out and they're just trying some new products.
That's scary. They think there's something wrong with
it's botulism. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, it's really low pH. No botulism can survive here, actually. But, you know, that's what they thought.
It's Yeah, because other krauts are in a jar. Where does the air go?
So like, if you look at some that are in a jar, if they are truly
raw,
then they will kind of bust
out
and explode. Yeah, they definitely may bubble. And they, you know, we'd get calls about it from new customers, like, oh, is this safe to eat? And I don't know about you, but I don't call companies all the time. So I'm figuring like, okay, that if there was one, there are many. Like people are just throwing this away. They're not coming back to us.
Yep.
They're not understanding this. So it was a deeper issue that we wanted to address. And then it did come along with it has that great feel. Our target buyer was like, this has much more of a millennial feel. I love the brand.
Yeah.
He got really excited. We were doing like Target local at the time and we made the transition to pouches and he brought us in like 600 stores right off the bat.
Amazing.
So that was a good, it was a great
I want to ask you guys a question because it will help me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it will help. You guys can all go take a break. No, when you're talking about velocities to potential buyers, obviously our New York City Whole Foods velocities are pretty crazy. I don't see that they will ever be replicated anywhere. Our Northeast velocities in Whole Foods are really good too. But again, it's Whole Foods. It's our home market.
Yep, yep.
Do you have a little way of predicting, or like what, how you talk to buyers in, if you start off in natural and you're starting off on your hometown or your home base, like what do you say to a conventional where they don't necessarily know you? They're not, you know, how do you talk about velocities or predict them or?
Yeah, no, I mean, I always, that was one of our great benefits early on is we had kind of local friendly buyers that would share these velocities.
Yeah.
And I would say, especially starting out, leverage the hell out of that data. Just just say, hey, here's what we're doing in, in X customer.
Yep.
And everybody's going to respect what Whole Foods velocity is.
Yep.
They should understand.
It's going to be less.
Yeah, our Kroger buyer, she's wonderful, but she understands. She's like, okay, you're doing that in Whole Foods. What can I expect?
Right.
And you can kind of taper it down by a multiple. But I would say if you, I try and align a very similar customer to them and say, hey, we're doing X and Y. We're doing this in Wegmans or we're doing this in, in a Publix, for for instance.
Yep.
So, but you always want to have those kind of like huge stories. Like, here's what we're doing in Whole Foods. And then maybe really small fine print New York City, like home market.
Well, what I've done is like, you know, because obviously the whole Northeast drags down the average velocity.
Right.
The New York City velocities are like,
Hey.
Yeah. But then sometimes I'll do like best day ever, you know, 95 units or whatever, you know, I mean, or like best week, or I'll try to sort of break it down. But it is funny going, starting to branch out into these more conventional retailers. I don't want to promise them a rose garden.
Right, yeah.
I also don't want to be like, wah, wah, it's not going to be
no,
this.
Exactly.
They kind of know more than me. They, my guess is that said target buyer definitely knows if your Whole Foods velocities are X, it's X divided by three or whatever.
And I would say, you know, pitching, definitely giving them that very A case. And on the top, you know, they definitely respect their customers and hope that, you know, while Whole Foods shoppers are definitely further along in the adoption curve and maybe a more educated customer, we hope the general public, especially with something like an emerging trend like fermented foods or very clean sauces, it's going to come along. So you can say, here's what we're doing in Whole Foods. With a couple years of maturity, I am confident we can get to these numbers.
That's great.
As well as just, you know, leveraging their marketing tools. And that's a great space where you can say, you know, we have great, we have great awareness here in New York City. These are the numbers we do. You tell me, help me build the promo plan that's going to get us to these numbers. But to your point, you don't want to promise 100 units per store per week if you're not going
to. I also want to be really careful to the extent that I have any control over it with the stores that have thousands of stores. I only want 500 of the best, or like maybe not even the best, quote unquote, but the ones that are the closest to my buyer.
Right.
You know,
that's
who
a smart play.
I feel like I have a heat map and I feel like I know it pretty well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if you guys, how it went with you, but we don't sell it online at this point. We're going to put it on our website,
it's
but
tough.
It's tough because it's fresh.
Yeah.
So we are in 22 states. Until the spring when we'll be in all of them, we can't really even do national press.
Right.
So I feel like we can't even tell our story entirely. So it's like a little chicken and egg, you know, or cart and horse, or I don't know what the expression is.
I would keep shouting the story though, because it's gonna, it drums up demand, and then you're gonna hear from, you know, it was interesting. We still do the online sales. It's really break even for us. It's not a great user experience, but we can leverage that data. And when we go down and talk to chains in Texas, we're like, hey, we get these online orders. There's a lot of demands in your region here. It's underserved.
Right. So when you do online, do you do, can you, do you do a case or do you do, you don't do one
it's
pouch
super
at a time,
tough. No, it's three pouches for $30. It's a barrier to entry for sure.
For sure.
Really tough to drive trial at that, especially if you're like, okay, I've heard fermented foods are good, or I do like sauerkraut. I'm not sure I'll like this brand of sauerkraut. Yeah. It's a lot of commitment, not only just the $30, but like you have 3 pounds of sauerkraut in your fridge and you have to know, like, I'm going to enjoy this. So it is challenging. I think that's obviously a $1 billion business. It's final mile refrigerated, like shipping.
But
somebody's going to figure it out.
I feel like one of my investors was like, you just need to have it as an option.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there will be the consumer who will, I'm not going to invest in it as like a channel.
Right.
You know, like I'm not ever going to be like 30% online. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you guys
see that either. Not right now.
So speaking of, we were talking about sort of the functionality of it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, prebiotics, probiotics, all biotics, fermentation. It's definitely, that is one lane you could definitely like go down hard. You also have this like siete, almost like foods, family, brother story. You could go down hard. Mm-hmm. You also have just like, it tastes really better than most other sauerkrauts, and it's more like chef driven. So yeah, so all of them obviously.
No, and yeah.
You do kind of have to choose a little bit.
We're definitely, we focus on being a culinary taste first brand.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So that's the lane we've chosen just from our upbringing, from being in the kitchen. It's just when you taste this crowd, you're like, oh shit. That's
no, good. I mean, I am officially like, I don't know what I am.
Kraut girl.
Yeah, I'm a kraut girl. Oh, I love that. I put it on everything. I actually, the other night, I crisped up tofu and I sauteed it with, you know, broccoli and a little bit of, you know, frozen peas because I had them, and some shiitake mushrooms and our nutty lemongrass. And then I served it with the turmeric kraut.
Yeah,
curry kraut, yeah.
And it was like, you wouldn't necessarily think that those two things would be amazing together, and yet it was perfect together, you know?
Yeah. All it's, right. You look around the world and every culture, even besides the United States, they're eating fermented foods with every meal.
Yep.
All over Asia, even South America, Europe, obviously. And so, you know, our mission is to make it easier for the fermented foods to fit in the American diet.
And you don't have to take a probiotic where everything's dead already anyway.
It's live, it's healthy, but we're going to make it delicious.
Yep.
And it's going to be healthy for you.
Things that, it can be the healthiest thing in the world, but if it tastes like crap. Yeah,
you
like
can say shit.
Yeah. It's, I already did. it's just not, you're not going to keep buying it. You're not going to keep eating
it. Food.
That's
like,
true.
What we noticed is we've just got this fervorish, the narnar is just like, people are like, this stuff is so gnarly. Like, I have it on my eggs in the morning and I'll throw it on a rice dish. Like, people just come back week after week to pick up their pouch at the grocery store because they have these dishes. We kind of take pride in ruining dishes for folks. Like, you can't have avocado toast without the beet red on there, a little feta. Like, so that's what we're definitely very focused on.
Yeah. On well, taste. You're doing a really good job at it. But that leads me to sort of something you said earlier, which is when you say sauerkraut, a lot of people have a vision of like the watery, cooked down, all very pale, grayish, white, kind of with the tongs out of the thing.
Right.
We have a lot of consumer education to do because similarly, when you say sauce, people are not thinking fresh chimichurri in the refrigerator, right?
Right.
They're thinking tomato, they're thinking barbecue, sometimes, you know, whatever. We have leaned hard into the fact that like all of our consumer education is happening in the grocery store. Obviously, we're doing stuff on our Instagram and yada yada. But at the end of the day, the grocery store is where we're really telling that story as best as we can. I sent you something the other day, which I'm sure you obviously had already known about, but I saw this thing for the Wienermobile.
Yes.
So my immediate thought was like, how do we get Mac on the Wienermobile? Like, there's a Wienermobile that goes around the country for Oscar Mayer hot dogs where they, I mean, I didn't know about this, but I read about it and sent you the thing because I was like, because you actually have vehicles that people do associate with kraut.
Right.
So you just have to get them to like associate it with your kraut, like fresh kraut, crunchy kraut. But how are you thinking about, how are you changing the way that people think about it? And how are you consumer educating?
No, absolutely. It's a.
And are you going to be on the Wienermobile?
I am definitely going to be on the Wienermobile. Okay. it's definitely a challenge. It's something that we're trying to tackle every day. But we are very focused on event and demo marketing as well, because it is something when we could preach this over the waves of the radio for until we get blue in the face, but until you have that first crunchy bite and then your mouth is watering and you want that umami, that great flavor, and you're like, oh shit, this is different.
Yeah.
It doesn't really click in your head. Like, I've the amount of people I've looked in their eyes that say, I don't like sauerkraut. Yep. And I'm like, no, don't walk away. You look outgoing, try it.
Right.
And they walk away with the pouch. They're like, wow, this, I didn't understand it could be this good. It's a fresh, crunchy vegetable with that little tinge of fermentation that adds that great flavor.
Yeah.
So it is very important. You know, we make sure we're popping up. Demos are key, but you'll find they're very tough to scale.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of stores won't let you do them with your own people.
And that's
I don't want some random person.
No, we have a team of like 125 part-time demo reps around the country. And we'll just kind of, okay, this month we're focused. We can just launch Publix. Get everybody in Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas going. Go to Publix. Make sure we're launching with a splash and build a base. You know, I heard Pat when he was on here and he it was great. It was, He is awesome. And it reinforced a lot of our thinking and things that we'd just been like, you know, when we were grinding, you know, short on cash, trying to build this velocity, we were all going out every day after work. We'd go to the stores and demo. So we knew kind of how to build this
from
scratch.
You also were at the farmer's market,
guys. We were at the farmer's market. No, exactly. And you know how to convert people. I will say driving trial at farmer's markets is so much easier because people come for the experience. Right. They're there to try new things. It is, especially when I used to come up and sleep on my buddy's couch and demo out at like Fairway. Oh, like interrupting people in New York City when they're on a mission is, you can get
it. I've had some people just be so mean, I'll be like, hey, you know, like, what do you got there?
Yeah.
You want to try some sauce? You know, like, it's so uncomfortable for me anyway. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, no, I don't. Like, why are you even talking to me?
Try it with sauerkraut. You know? Like, is that your smell that I've been like?
Literally said, ew.
Is like, that your smell?
Oh, my God. And that's so funny. The worst is when, like, there's a kid that's, like, a small child that's, like, really trying to come. And their parents are like, no, you won't like that. I'm like, whoa, let's reinforce some healthy habits. They might love it.
Yeah. Okay, so innovation. Mm-hmm. So I know we can't discuss exactly what's coming out. Mm-hmm. I took a stab.
You did take a stab.
I made a guess.
It's a good guess.
I felt like it was a pretty good guess, on trend-ish. Yeah, anyway, I was wrong. But how do you, before we talk, I mean, we're not talking about what you guys are launching at Expo and what's coming out in the spring. But how do you think about innovation? Like, A, were you like, we need to come out? Like, did you hit the sort of number of sauerkraut SKUs that you think? And then you're like, we need to think of other categories? Or like, what was the mind map a little
going
bit?
Going back to your question, like how to drive trial. Well, if we're looking at our company as a company that's focused on fermentation and making that easier for the American diet, then you can take a step back and think, you know, how do we build new products that accomplish that goal?
Right.
And also kind of our number one thing is taste. Are people going to come back for this? We had, and all will be unveiled at Expo West, but we had a first early iteration of a product that could have been similar to this. And we just realized you're not going to come back just seeking this taste. You won't miss this flavor from your dish. Like, so
it was skewed towards health and we're not,
we're not skewed towards health.
And that goes back to sort of what I always talk about on here. And that's like why I asked you the question about which lane, because yes, of course you are all of those things. We have many different stories too, but it's like, you can't build a strategy and operations ties into that strategy and sales ties into that strategy and marketing, right?
If you pick your lane and you're like, this is what we're going to do, then it makes the decision so much easier down the, like, no, we're going left here, even though right looks good.
Right.
We're going left. We decided we're going left. Like,
and the market will push you funny. It'll make you feel like you're making like sort of like a, you know, maybe I'm being too... maybe I should go into this crazy thing that
you can't be everything.
No,
you don't have enough time. You don't have enough money. Your brand's not going to be able to handle it.
And that's not what your consumers want from you.
Right. And understanding, when we think about innovation, understanding our kind of core tenets and guiding principles of being delicious and healthy, but delicious first has to be first. Then we kind of drill down what's delicious and fermented we can create, what is within our core competency of refrigerated, and what can we kind of stay similar category.
Right.
Although you know as well as we do, there's no, our categories kind of float, especially from natural to conventional.
I
think we're in like, if you tallied it up across the country, we're probably in three different.
Well, right, because you're in produce in some, deli in some, and dairy in others.
Dairy,
well, those are the three refrigerators.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Wherever there's a refrigerated space is technically where a grocer could put us.
I know, it's
it
very funny.
It is nice once buyers start fighting over you, though. And yes. then, like, produce is like, I'm doing this to shove it in meat's face. Like,
yeah.
this crap, they're selling that old, mushy, terrible stuff, right. and I got this.
Yeah.
So,
well, especially if the velocity's good and the price point's right. a little bit more premium, then mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're doing things for their baskets that they right. have not mm-hmm. seen.
No,
yeah.
Exactly.
Which is really fun. And so once you kind of, so it starts off, and is it the three of you in a room and you're like, okay, guys, time to think about 2022. Do we want to do new products? How do we want to think about this?
2022. yeah, we're not that far. But it is, we do look, you know,
oh, right.
minimum
it's just
a year
2020
out.
Now. Yeah. Right. Okay.
We're always throwing yeah, ideas around. There's things that, and then it gets into, we don't use this as, this is not a deciding factor, but we do like to look at what a category size could look like.
Yeah, for sure.
Because at the end of the day, it's dollars and cents. So we have to know if we're able to carve out a chunk of X category, what's that going to mean to our business?
Right.
And is it a worthy, you know, pursuit?
Yeah.
So is it going to be worth all the blood, sweat, and tears that we're about to pour into
right.
it? And the distraction that it's going to take from our core business of sauerkraut.
And is it something where right now you're thinking about, I do want to stay with the buyers that I've made the relationships with?
Exactly.
Right.
So you're not.
You've got a pipeline. Like, right. let's send something else
stick
down
with
that pipeline.
Your people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. if you can get a, we've gotten to a place where our Whole Foods buyer, Adam, he's amazing. And
mine
if you
too.
Can, yeah, he's, yeah, Adam's awesome.
Yeah.
But if, when you can build that relationship and you're bouncing product ideas
yeah.
off of a key buyer and a kind of a thought leader in the space and who understands trends, really understands that category data
yeah.
and where shoppers
buy
are going.
By region too,
right,
which
right.
is really
oh, yeah.
interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. When you can build that relationship and bounce those ideas off of them and have them put their input in and really
yeah.
kind of feel like a brand owner too,
yeah.
that's also when you're going to get that great placement and when you're going to get those deals and
yeah.
when you're going to get the global push.
I think that's something that I do try to say on here a lot. I don't know if I've said it recently, but I think it's a really good point. To that this is just a relationship driven business, as
totally.
As I think all businesses
yeah.
probably are, right?
Humans.
But like that buyer, it's not like that has to be a real genuine relationship where you trust them, they trust you,
mm-hmm.
you're honest with them. Like it's when John Lawson came on here and he's like, the brands that don't tell me when they're not gonna like
right.
be able to produce, like it sticks in my head, you know?
Yeah.
And building those relationships and listening to them and not assuming that they're just trying to get another slotting fee out of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think sometimes people go into this like very defensive and,
right.
you know,
yeah.
it's not going to work so great.
No, you have to be very optimistic if you're going to be in this business. But I think definitely we learned that we actually went through this summer. We had, so to your point about testing in various, like especially conventional retailers. So
mm-hmm.
Walmart did a test with us in 150 stores, and our buyer was excellent. He went to the data. He said, here's our, they call it a high organic store,
right.
the highest organic sales. He's like, we're going to place you in these geographies where
amazing.
You're already, you know, doing very well. And we tested it, and then he put us in 1500.
Right.
And we misforecasted completely.
Yeah.
And we were walking into,
without you knowing?
Ship date.
You had to produce
He gave
for
us
it.
Everything.
No,
that
he gave us.
Right.
We didn't.
We just,
yeah.
There was also some complicating factors as life happens, but we couldn't move into our bigger space in time.
Right.
Like there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
But basically, as soon as we got those POs, it was like, we got the largest order we've ever had, which is awesome, but we're like, oh,
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
We don't have
we cannot ship
right.
it.
It
takes 30 days to make
yeah.
our product,
right.
too. You know,
and
like,
so,
yeah.
yeah.
And so we went to him right away. Drew built out an amazing, basically, a get well plan, and we said,
right.
and we thought, hey, let's ship enough products so he's made these planograms, so every product they can have that first shipment when it's supposed to go out in modulars on that first week, and let's prepare a get well program so we can continue doing business as usual as
right.
well. Obviously a little limited,
right?
But we need to get better. And we told him that, and he was like, listen, I'm gonna work with you. I thank
right.
you so much for
yep.
being transparent.
Yep.
Like, because you've given me this great strategy, we're still going ahead.
Yeah, amazing.
You've given me a month that we're going to be a little short in the DCs,
right.
but we'll get there.
Right.
And
he doesn't have
know.
Empty shelves.
Yeah.
He's
right.
got at least
yeah.
one
and
a half case going. Like
yeah.
it was this whole
it was
plan.
A key learning.
He loved
that's
it.
Great.
I think
that's actually a secondary.
Yeah.
It's not just transparency, but it's
mm-hmm.
like, here's the problem and here's my plan
right.
for
yeah.
how we're going
to
fix it.
That's
exactly.
the best
like,
way to
yeah.
go into one of those
going
calls.
In there,
I like a get well plan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's kind of like you want, from a team member, you want someone that's not only like, okay, here's a problem. But like, here's also what I'm thinking of as
right.
a solution.
Yeah,
here's
so
A
course.
Or B, like this
yeah.
is what we can do, right. as far as I can tell.
That's yeah. the right. other thing that you really learn in this business is if you treat buyers as like humans and other people, like how would they want, like would you want to know if a problem's coming and here's
yeah.
how I'm going to fix
yeah.
it and address them. You know, it does take some time to get in your mind mentally kind of a buyer off the pedestal and like, oh no,
yeah.
they can be your friend. They are truly a partner. Like
yes.
it's definitely a bastardized term in the industry, but like
right.
if you get that good relationship, they're your partner.
Yeah.
Like if you're crushing it, they're getting bonused
yeah.
off that. They're getting
totally.
Compensated off
yep.
that.
Yeah.
They need their sets
They
to
have
perform.
A winning case to
yeah.
report
yeah.
up to their senior, like, hey,
That's
I
great.
Took a risk on this young product and look at how it's doing.
Yeah.
Boom. Like that. You're making them look good.
Yeah.
So they're going to love you. You
yeah.
know?
Okay, guys. I wanted to talk about brand partnerships because we actually met
yeah.
through someone DMing someone to do,
yep.
I think Maddie DM'd you guys cause she's from Cleveland. So
I saw you guys were launching in Fresh Market and I'll occasionally still hop. We have a great social media team, but I'll hop on just cause you know,
right.
you want to get in there. And I saw you guys were launching. So I shot a DM. I'm like, hey, like let's partner up.
Oh,
I
started
yeah.
it.
And
oh,
I was listening.
So nice.
Yeah. I would always listen to the podcast.
Aww.
Loved watching how you guys were growing the sauce.
Yay.
So yeah. And Maddie was like, yeah, I'm from Cleveland. I'm hyped.
Yeah. No, we were super psyched. And then we made a few really good things. I didn't really understand brand partnerships so much at the beginning. Now I'm like,
yeah,
who are every brand and across
right.
the country that I want to like be with and
yeah.
like join up with because it's so much fun and
yeah.
really good things happen out of it. We're now
yeah.
on a Slack channel together
exactly.
where we talk about, you know, the Wienermobile.
The Wienermobile.
Okay. Question for both of you, different answers if possible. Either what you wish you had known or your best advice to founders, something that's going to save someone either like $10,000 or 3 months.
Yeah.
I can think of a specific one. I think a high level one is you just can't stop. You cannot stop. If you come up to a wall, you have to go under it,
over it,
through it,
yeah.
around it. You cannot stop. I see people giving up all the time.
Oh, there's a wall.
Yeah. It's like, no, trust me. It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
It's going to get harder. And you just have to keep going.
Awesome.
You just cannot stop. That's a high level one.
Yep.
Let me think of a specific one. But.
Okay.
I
well,
would
Matthew.
Say, yeah. No, from early on, what kind of separated us and allowed us to build those amazing case studies where we did prove out the velocity and we could take kind of a roadmap of get into the retailer and perform very well, lead the category, grow, and then get your lasting place in shelf
mm-hmm.
was demoing the hell out of it personally. Get out there. If you're telling me your velocities are bad or like you're not growing with the chain or you can't get into more, I'm like, okay, where's your data, where's your case study, and why
right.
are you sitting here why are you in the office, why aren't you out
right.
selling your product, like nobody
yep.
else is going to do it for you.
That's another thing Bill Krillman did.
Oh,
like
yeah.
he was up and down the street with Spindrift
yeah,
like in
must.
A backpack yeah.
I think that's so key of like if you're thinking I can't drive sales, like we had this summer where we hadn't fundraised, the process, it takes 30 days to ferment, right? So
mm-hmm.
we get raw materials in, by the time they ferment, even before we ship them, our bills are due.
Right.
So we're incredibly cash crunched. So we just had this summer where we're every day, weekday, where there wasn't a farmer's market, I'm demoing and selling the hell out of it on shelf so we can get repeat POs.
Yeah.
And then we're also all at each farmer's market through the whole weekend just getting cash in.
Yeah.
And so I just say if
you have to push,
you have to hustle, you have to create those case studies where people look at that data and they can't ignore you.
Yeah. And it's funny because I've met so many people that are in the Whole Foods stores and don't use the portal.
I know.
Like,
I
don't even get
data.
It. I love the portal.
It's amazing.
I mean, I'm not, like, personally very good at getting it, but every week I'm like, velocities.
Yeah, where are we at?
All right, guys. Thank you so much
thank you
for coming
having
on.
Us.
Thank you for being next to us. Like, you're the best neighbors. I hope we can keep growing alongside you. And good luck and have the best time. And we'll see you at Expo. And thanks for coming on. And to all of you listeners out there, thank you for listening. Matt, thank you for being the best engineer. And I'll be back with another episode of In the Sauce. In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.